Next, I'd like to introduce Dr. Kara Young, who's an assistant professor at the University of Texas at Austin in the School of Nursing, and she's going to be talking about predictors of substance use in African-American and Mexican-American high-risk adolescent women.
Thank you. And thank you all for braving the cold weather this morning. I would also like to acknowledge and thank the principal investigator and my co-investigator, Dr. Jane Champion, who has arrived this morning to keep me honest, I think. I am excited to be presenting this secondary data analysis because it represents an important expansion of my prior work, which is focused on depressive and anxiety symptoms in underserved rural adolescents. As nurses, though, we are intimately aware of the fact that our mental health is not isolated from our physical health nor our sexual health. We are complex individuals, and so this expansion of my work I'm excited about because it helps to broaden my purview, and as we're working towards interventions that help keep adolescents and then adults healthier and happier, we need to include that those complex situations and contexts in which they live and work and develop. I have no financial relationships to disclose, but I would like to acknowledge Dr. Champion's primary funding source for this project, which was the National Institute of Drug Abuse. By way of providing just some significance to this issue, ethnic minority adolescent women are disproportionately affected by rates of STI. As you can see, Hispanic adolescent females, their rates are 6 times higher than their Caucasian counterparts, and the African-American adolescents, 16 times higher rate of gonorrhea, 30 times higher rate of syphilis. Specifically, adolescent women with a history of abuse, be that physical, sexual, or emotional, are more likely to engage in high-risk sexual behaviors. 33% of American high school students report current sexual activity, but of those, only 40% deny using condoms as a means of STD and HIV protection and risk reduction, and 78% deny using any form of hormonal birth control to try to prevent pregnancy. 15% of American high school students report more than 4 lifetime sexual partners, and as we know, with each, that risk level increases exponentially with each sexual partner that an adolescent engages with. High-risk sexual behaviors and elevated STI rates during adolescence have been associated with other health risk behaviors. These activities do not occur in isolation, such as illicit substance use as well as alcohol use. Use of alcohol and other drugs is particularly common among those who report depressive symptoms and vice versa. And recent findings suggest that the depressive symptoms may be associated with high-risk sexual behaviors because distressed youth are more likely to engage in illicit substance use and alcohol use. Evidence shows, though, that culturally tailored interventions to prevent STI have been shown to be effective at prevention of STI in high-risk Mexican-American and African-American adolescent women. This, as I said, is a secondary data analysis, but the primary study is based on the AIDS risk reduction model. That is the model that guided the development of the highly complex intervention using multiple models and theories that were already in existence and coming up with a comprehensive intervention for STI and HIV risk reduction. The purpose of this analysis was to evaluate depressive symptoms and substance use among this high-risk adolescent group and to identify factors then that were associated with substance use to inform modification of these community-based interventions for high-risk adolescents. The eligibility criteria for this primary study was they must be African-American or Mexican-American women 14 to 18 years of age that were utilizing primary health care services at metropolitan public health care clinics. High risk was defined as either having a history of STI, participating or reporting high-risk sexual behaviors, or a history of sexual or physical violence. This secondary analysis evaluates the baseline data collected from these participants that were involved in this RCT. The
extensive ethnographic fieldwork was conducted to develop a very comprehensive questionnaire, semi-structured interview that all these participants were engaged in. Specifically for this secondary analysis, we evaluated depressive symptoms, which were measured by the CESD, of extensive history of abuse screening questionnaire, as well as extensive substance use, personal, as well as acquaintances, peers, partners, parents, and siblings, and the full range of substances were asked about in these interviews. As you can see, the mean age was approximately 16 and a half. As you would expect, the study was conducted primarily in San Antonio, so as you might expect, we had statistically significantly more Mexican-American adolescents than African-American adolescents. No statistically significant differences there with household income or education status. However, when we look at some additional contextual variables, we see that there were no difference between the substance use and non-substance use group in terms of being arrested or being pregnant. However, as you will note, those first two percentages for the total sample reach almost 50%, or almost half of the sample had either been arrested or been pregnant. But when we move to the variables that are underneath, we begin to see some statistically significant differences between the substance use group and the non-substance use group, including running away, a history of STI, violence history, be that sexual, emotional, and physical, as well as a history of alcohol and cigarette use. Low risk and high risk here was determined based on the score of 16 on the CESD, which is pretty much standard looking at high risk for depressive disorders. And as you can see, most of these women fell within the high risk category. That percentage is over 80% of the sample fell in that high risk group. They reported numerous substances, including a high rate of personal benzodiazepine use, as well as then peer use. Then at the top there, concerning as well, as over a third of the sample reported personal crack cocaine use. Over half of them also reported their peers were additionally using those substances. Marijuana use, perhaps not too surprisingly, is extremely elevated in this group, with almost 80% personal use and over 80% peer use. The final logistic regression model predicting participant substance use demonstrated that Mexican-American adolescents were almost three times as likely to report using substances. The substance using group was twice as likely to also have their peers using substances, as well as a history of STI, and then reports of alcohol use. They were five times more likely to be in that substance using group. From these results, we see that Mexican-American adolescent women were significantly more likely to report substance use than African-American adolescent women in this study. Substance use was associated with a history of STI, depressive symptoms, running away, exposure to violence, and alcohol and cigarette use. And as I stated before, over 80% of the participants, reported having friends who used marijuana, and almost half reported peers using benzos. From this data, and we recognize that this is simply baseline data, and hopefully we'll be back presenting those 6-month and 12-month outcomes for the intervention group specifically, but that interventions aimed at reducing the incidence of STI should include comprehensive protocols that address these other factors, the high rate of depressive symptoms and substance use, particularly with Mexican-American adolescent women. And additionally, the role of peer substance use and personal alcohol use are additional potential for targets for these comprehensive interventions. And I would love to answer any questions.